Today's shiur is Masechta Nedarim Daf Chav Ches. We will begin on Daf Chav Zayin on the Beis, three lines from the bottom at the Mishnah. Our Mishnah continues in discussing and teaching us halachas of Nidrei Einsim. Nidrei Einsim, where a person made a neder if he really didn't want to make the neder. Teaches us the Mishnah, Nidrim Laharogim. If there was a person who is a murderer and he's here not to murder Chas V'Shalom someone, because if it's a question of pikuach nefesh, then everything is mutter. He is a murderer, and you don't want to challenge him. So he wants to take something from you, and you need to have a way of saving your property from him. Well, charamim are not people that kill, but people who are bandits. Ula muhsin, a tax collector, and we'll discuss this more in the Gemara soon, mitzvashem. So one can make a nether that the item that he wants to take is truma. The Karen Iris seems to say from the Rambam that not only may this nether be made for me to save my property, but if I want to save someone else's property, I see that they want to seize someone else's property, and the way I could save the property is by saying to this person who's taking it illegally that this is truma, that is also permitted to make that type of a nether. Now the obvious question is, if we're referring to an individual who's a harogim, haramim, muhsin, are they worried that the item is truma, that they're all of a sudden worried about kashrus? So the Rishonim deal with that issue, and it's again, it's a culture that we're not familiar with. And in their world, tuma tahara, truma, was something that even people who were not necessarily the most pious individuals were careful with, particularly truma, because truma, if a czar, if a Yisrael is truma, there's a chi of misa, and therefore they avoided truma. So if somebody says that this item is truma, he stayed away from it. There's a machloikis rishonim, which will become a little clearer in Mitzvah Shem when we learn the Gemara. What is the nether of truma? Pashup shat in the Mishnah that the nether or the shvuah on the discussion is that the person makes a nether or a shvuah that this item is truma. However, there are Rishonim to say that that can't be pshat in the Mishnah. Because somebody makes a neder, makes a shvuah, I mean, that the item is truma. When it isn't, it's a shvuah shav. And there is no heter for a shvuah shav. So the case of the Mishnah, those Rishonim clearly indicate, is that somebody makes a neder that if this item isn't truma, I should be asked to eat, or I should be asked to do something. And that's how I convey to this person that this item is truly truma. Of course, it's important to say, the Ramah says this, quotes the Marik, that when we're saying that these Nadarim, and we're going to spend time with Shem in the Gemara too, discussing that these Nadarim may be made, are only in circumstances where I'm at risk of losing something that is mine. So even though, as we know, and we're going to continue learning, making a false neder is obviously an Aveira, here there's no option. But if my goal is just to earn money, and this is a way that I could profit, not just save something, but actually profit. It's certainly, that's not the subject of our Mishnah, would be awesome. Or I could say, Shehen Shel Beis HaMelech, that these items belong to the king, Abi Shehen Shel Beis HaMelech. And the way Rabbeinu Peretz explains the Mishnah is as follows. To harogin and haromim, by telling them that the item is truma, as we explained a moment ago, that's how they'll stay away from the item. Telling a muchas, telling a tax collector that the item is truma is really not going to accomplish anything. What you tell him is that this item is already designated as the government's, so there's no point in you taking it to collect taxes from me. Says the Mishnah further, Beshamay says that these nedarim are mutter, b'chol nedarim, we can make such a neder, and the Rishonim say that the word b'chol comes to say that not only may a neder be made, but even hegdish, which is a form of neder, may be done under these circumstances. However, chutz me b'shvuah. The Shamish says a shvuah may not be taken under these circumstances. And as we've learned so many times, because a shvuah is more stringent than a neder, as the Pasuk says regarding shvuah, lo yinaka, that's why Beshama is more stringent by a shvuah than by a neder. Also, as the Mefarshim explained, typically a shvuah was made when mentioning Hashem's name, and therefore, Beis Shammai doesn't want Hashem's name to be taken even under these circumstances. Beis Hillel say, after Shavuah, even with a Shavuah, one could do such a thing. Beisham Aymerim, lo yiftach loy b'neder. Beisham says, even though he's allowing a neder to be taken under these circumstances, one who's trying to get out of the clutches of such an individual may not volunteer to make a neder. If he says that this is truma, and the person says to him, I don't believe you, make a neder, then he's allowed to make a neder. But to volunteer, he may not. Not only can he make a neder in response to this individual, he's even allowed to suggest, initiate making a neder. B'sham says, b'mashu medirai. When I'm responding to a neder, I'm only allowed to respond to what the person told me to make a neder. In other words, this person said, if you, what you're saying is true, I want you to make this neder. See, I only could say what he says. I can't add to it. I could say even more. So the Rush makes two observations. He says, what would be the halacha if the person challenges me to make a neder, but he doesn't give me a prescription of what he wants me to say? Says the Rush, in that circumstance, even Beisham will agree that whatever I say is fine. Because it's not like I'm responding to what he told me. I'm just doing what he said. Whatever neder I'll say, as expansive and as large of an issue it is, it'll be an acceptable neder. The Rush also asks, if Beis Hillel says that I could even initiate the neder, certainly if I'm just responding, I could expand on what he said. So what's the Mishnah telling me in Beis Hillel? Says the Rush, that one would say that to initiate a neder, it's a good idea how I could get out of this trouble. But now when a person went and told me what he wants to say, what gives me the right to add to that? Teaches us the Mishnah that even though I said more than I was supposed to, they still says it's fine. Ketzat, and the Mishnah gives an example of what it means. Amaloi, the person who's challenging me, trying to take my property away from me, says to me, Kainim ishtenenesli, I want you to make a neder that your wife will be also in benefit. Prove that you're saying is true. V'omer, and the person in response says, Kainim ishtu bonai nenemli, they're not only my wife, but even my children. V'shamayim ishtu mutaris, his wife is mutar because he was doing it in response. However, Bonav, who asked you to speak about your children? And therefore, they're asurim. V'sel oimrim, elu v'elu mutarim, both his wife and the children are mutar. So the Rishonim and the Achronim discuss two subjects. One issue they bring up is that we know the halacha is that a neder that one makes that his wife may not benefit from him is not a valid neder because we have a prior obligation to our wives. So the neder is anyway not a valid neder on the wife. Teach us the Rishonim from this Mishnah that even though the part of the wife is not a neder, besides the issue of that it's because he's only doing it in response to these ganovim, still, that doesn't, according to Beis Shammai, affect the other part of the nether to his children, which will be considered a valid nether. But then the Mefarshim asks the very obvious question, which comes to mind after the sugya that we just finished learning, of nether shutta miktsasa, huta kulay. And the question is, according to Beis Shammai, even if we'll say, why did you speak about your children? Who asked you to speak about your children? But why don't we apply the concept of neder shutta miktsasa huta kulay? And according to Beis Hillel, why do we say that the neder on the children is not a problem? Because I'm allowed to volunteer and say more than I was asked to. But I have to come on to that shot. We should say neder shutta miktsasa huta kulay. The Mefarshim all discuss this question, and a number of answers are given to this question. One answer is that we only say neder shutta miktsasa huta kulay when the neder was somewhat effective. When the neder was effective, and then we're trying to, and then we go and have it annulled. So we say, neder shutta miktsasa huta kulay, even the part that I didn't ask for an annulment, the annulment will affect. Here on the wife, I didn't have to come on to neder shutta miktsasa, on any atara. It's just not a neder. And therefore, the concept of neder shutta miktsasa huta kulay doesn't apply. Another teretz that the Shalman Dharm says is as follows. When do we say neder shutta miktsasa huta kulay? When we have, it's similar, somewhat similar to the previous teretz. I have a neder. I'm going to a rav to have it annulled. You say neder shutta miktsasa huta kulay. But if the neder, if I'm using neder shutta miktsasa huta kulay at the inception of the neder to use it as a means of annulling the entire neder, that's not what neder shutta miktsasa huta kulay means. Another pshat The Nadash at the Maktsatsa to Kula only works when I'm going to Rav to have a Hatara. So even if he's only matter part of it, Nadash at the Maktsatsa to Kula. Here there's no need to go to Rav for Hatara, and therefore we can't apply the concept of Nadash at the Maktsatsa to Kula. Ask the Gemara, our Mishnah said that a person is allowed to make this nether to fend off the tax collector. Ask the Gemara, that's illegal. Rav Shmuel, Dina Nevechusadina, we have to pay taxes. We have to follow the law of the land. And there's a machlaikas rishonim, why did in the Malchusadina? The Ran here says, because the entire country really belongs to the king. And he allows us to live in the country that he owns, and he can make rules that we have to follow. The Rajbam, in Masechta Baba Basra, explains that when the people of a country elect, even if it's not an election, even if it's not a democracy, but appoint or have a king, and they're all under his rule, and they understand and agree to be under his rule, that's what's part being under his rule, that they accept that with the rules he makes, we will follow. The Ran says a very interesting nafkamina between these two pshatim. He says, in Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael doesn't belong to the king. Eretz Yisrael belongs to all of Klal Yisrael. So if the reason we say Dina de Malchusa Dina is because the country, the land, belongs to the king, and at the Shrol, says the Ran, there would be no Dina de Malchusa Dina. No, the land belongs to the government. And at the Shrol, it doesn't belong to the government, it belongs to Jews. And therefore, they don't have that power, says the Ran. So ask the Gemara, how can we avoid paying taxes? Dina de Malchusa Dina. Amar Rav Chinan, Amar Rav Ana, Amar Shmuel, but Mucha Shein Lekitzo. As the Mefarshim explained, in those days, there wasn't a government agency that collected taxes. Taxes was a business that was given over as a franchise. The king appointed a person to collect the taxes. He kept a certain commission for himself, and he gave away, and the rest went to the king. If there's a person, there's two pshatim in Mukhashen Lekitzva. One is that he abuses what the government told him. The government gave him a certain right, certain rates, and he makes up his own rates. Or another pshat is that he doesn't treat all the people equally, which is a very fundamental halacha in Dina de Malchusa Dina, that many Rishonim say, this has unfortunately been part of the Jewish experience, that when the government does not treat all people equally, then we don't apply the concept of Dina de Malchusa Dina. And therefore, here, if we have a person who taxes the Jews or taxes certain individuals differently than other people, then it's not considered Dina Mechusa Dina. Although there is a Machlokes Achronim, if Jews are singled out to be treated differently, but all Jews are treated the same way, do we say Dina Mechusa Dina or not? Some of Paiskim say that then we still say Dina Mechusa Dina. Other Paiskim say that if Jews are singled out to be treated differently, then we don't say Dina Mechusa Dina. And actually, I saw this concept used in a very interesting way. The Gemara says in Masechta Shabbos that Klal Yisrael said by Har Sinai, Nasa v'nishma. It says the Gemara, it was an oinus. They didn't do it because they really wanted to do it. It was kafaleim hakigigas. They were forced into it, and therefore mekam moidor rabbalei raisa. They have a claim to say that we don't have to follow the Torah. We were oinus. We were forced. Only later, in the time of Mordechai and Esther, had the kablua, they makablet berotz. So the Mefarshim ask, you can't use oinus when you're going against the king. And here, who told him to be makablet taira? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Melech Malchim Malachim. So why don't we apply the concept of Dina Melchusa Dina? Says the Proshas Terachim, because since HaKadosh Baruch Hu singled out the Jews, it was only the Jews that had to keep up the taira, no one else. We just said the Dina Melchusa Dina only applies when everybody's treated equally, not when one segment of the population is singled out. And actually, he uses this pshat to explain a very interesting debate in the Torah. We find the Paroi tells the Miyaldois Hoavrios, the Shifra and Pua, that when you see a boy, Jewish boy born, kill him. And they didn't listen, of course. Paroi calls them in. And he says, why don't you do what I said? What was Paro's challenge to them? Dina de Malchusa Dina. I'm the king. I told you to do something. How did they respond? If you would have made a rule that everybody follows that rule, then you have a taina, you have a claim. But you singled out the Jews, like Mitzrayos or Ivriyos. You separated between the Mitzrayos and the Ivriyos. When Jews and non-Jews are not treated the same way, there is no dina de mechusa dina, and that's why they said we didn't have to listen to what you said. Another pshat, the Bei Reb Yani Amar, but mechusa imer eilav. It's not a person who was appointed by the governor, by the government, to collect the taxes. He does it on his own. So there's no. That's what the Mishnah is referring to, and that's why there's no dina de mechusa dina. So, just to stop for a moment and discuss this halacha of dina de mechusa dina, the mefarshim make the poskim make a number of comments. Rav Volzner says in the tshuva that laws that are passed by the government or that are in effect for the safety of society, we don't have to rely on dina de mechusa dina that we have to follow. And as he says that one is not allowed to cross at a red light, has nothing to do with dina mechusa dina. Even if you'll say that there is no dina mechusa dina in a certain country, you still have to follow the rules, the traffic rules, because that's just basic laws to keep everybody safe and sound. And therefore, certainly you have to follow those rules. On the other hand, I saw a tshuva from Rav Yosef that if we're going to, he asks a very fundamental question. If we're going to apply the concept of dina de mechusa dina, we may not be left with a Torah, because there are many rules passed by the non-Jewish government that are contrary to the Torah. So when do we follow dina de mechusa dina, and when do we follow what it says in the Torah? So he says clearly, when the government passes a rule, a law, that isn't for the betterment of society or isn't for the need of the country, it just happens to be the law on the books, and it's contrary to the Torah, we don't say dina mechusa dina. What's the example he gives? He gives a great example. He says, in most countries, in most secular countries, the rule is that all children inherit the parents. Boys and girls the same, sons and daughters. There's no dina b'chayra. There's a wife has inherits before the children. Midaraisa, only sons inherit. A b'char gets double. He said, but the rule that the government passed that the entire family inherits has nothing to do for the betterment of society. That's the secular law. But it's there we certainly don't follow dina de mechusa dina. We have to follow the din d'oraisa. The question that comes up that the Paiskim discuss is where dina de mechusa dina, where rules are passed for the welfare of society but are contrary to the Torah, what do we do? I saw two examples. One example I saw is that in most countries, there's a system of punishment. Fines, or jail, or even in many countries, people are put to death, and even in the United States, which probably, certainly don't follow the din d'oraisa. You don't have kosher edim, you don't have a bezdin. So what's the halacha? Do we follow the country's laws? Should we participate in those countries' laws? Or do we follow the Torah law? Because those laws were passed for the welfare of society, to prevent criminals. The Paiskim seem to say then we follow Dina de Mechusa Dina. Another example, the Chalkas Yaakov has a very interesting shaila. The Torah speaks about slavery, Evet Kanani, Shifcha Kananis. And it's not just an Evet Kanani, Shifcha Kananis. Actually, Evet Kanani, Shifcha Kananis could come in quite handy, not just because you need a slave. They could come in handy because the halacha is that a mamzer has to marry a mamzeris, and their children will be mamzerim, and that could continue forever. So the Gemara says, Yichoyle mamzerim latar. How could mamzerim lose that status? If a mamzer marries a shifcha, a mamzeris marries an eved kanani, then their child will be an eved or a shifcha, and then you could free him and he'll be a regular Jew. So if we live in a country, like most countries of the world nowadays, where slavery was abolished. Because that's for the welfare of society. But it has impact on halacha. If I would have a mamzer, if I could have an Eved Kanani or a Shifcha Kananis, I would have a way of taking off this stigma from this family. Am I allowed to arrange to have an Eved Kanani or Shifcha Kananis for a mamzer? The Chalkas Yaakov seems to say that since this law, most countries, that slavery was abolished, was for the welfare of society, so we cannot go and create a Never Kanani or a Shifcha Kananis, even though we have a very valid reason to do so. There's also an interesting Machloikas HaAchroinim. In our Gemara, we discussed that why is the person in our Mishnah allowed to avoid the tax collector? Because the tax collector is not acting fairly. He's going to this individual and asking for more than the individual really is supposed to pay. So now the shah is like this. Let's say the individual, if everything was right, would have to pay a rate of 25%. And this tax collector is acting improperly to him and demanding 35%. So what is pshat in the Mishnah? Is pshat in the Mishnah that he could then pay nothing? He could use the Eitzah, the advice the Mishnah gives us, to avoid paying taxes at all? Or is pshat the 25%, which he's legally obligated to pay, he has to pay? It's the extra 10% that the Mishnah will allow him to use this device. So the Mishnah said, the person could say that these items, this property, she'en she'beis ha'melech, v'abi she'en she'beis ha'melech. Ask the Gemara, hechi noda. And the Rishonim have a number of ways of explaining this Gemara's question. Ran says, to say that something is truma is not a nether. It's just not a nether. So what's pshat in the Mishnah? That's not the way in the Dharma made. The Rosh says, if the person made a nether, he's obligated to fulfill his nether. So how could our Mishnah say that he doesn't have to? Omer Rav, ba'omer ya'asur peiros olam alai, em enish beis ha'melech. It's not that the person made a nether that this is truma. He said that if this is truma, if this is not truma, I want to corroborate that it's truma, and I'm willing to say that if it's not, I'm not going to be allowed to eat fruit. Ask the Gemara if that's what the nether of our Mishnah is. So kivin the Omer Yasru, the moment he made this nether, it's like kopeir the alma. So all the fruits of the world became us to him. So how could he get out of the nether? Answers the Gemara, ba'omer hayoyim. He added to the nether that only for today they should be usher. Ask the Gemara the obvious question. E the Omer Hayoin, if when I'm trying to get this tax collector off my back, so I make the nether. So if I'm going to tell him that, you know, I'm willing to tell you it's truma, and if it's not, I'm not going to be allowed to eat apples today. So that's going to fend him off. So I won't eat apples today. E the Omer Hayoin, lemekabunei muchas. That's not the way I'm going to have the muchas leave me alone. Answers the Gemara. I said in my when I articulated the nether, when I articulated the nether, I said all fruit. I didn't put a time limit on it. But what I meant in my heart was just today. Even though typically the halach is dvarim shebelev and dvarim, I can't go and interpret a nether afterwards to say that I meant only today. In this case, since I'm under duress, it's different. So the Mefarshim make a number of comments. One comment that they say, we clearly see in our Gemara, that if somebody makes a nether and he doesn't put a time frame on it, so if it's not the situation that we're discussing, where the person is an oinus, where the person is under pressure, the halacha is, if I didn't put a time frame, it means forever. Now the Rishonim ask the following. That means as follows. If I make a nether, I'm not going to eat a food, and I didn't put a time frame, our Gemara is clearly teaching us I can never eat that fruit. What happens if I make a nether, the Rishonim discussed this specific shaila, that I'm going to do something, but I didn't put a time frame on it. That means, let's say I say, I'm going to support this Talmud Chochem. I'm going to support this poor person. But when I said I didn't put a time frame, am I obligated to do it forever? Or am I not obligated to do forever? If I said I'm not going to do something, that if I don't put a time frame, it's forever. If I'm going to say, however, that I'm going to do something, as a machlokes rishonim, how long I'm obligated to do it? Do I only have to do it once? Do I have to do it forever? Then the Paiskim say a very interesting halakha l'maisa. Our Mishnah is teaching us that we have to be specific and on the Dorim. So the Paiskim discussed, Mishnah Brewer even discusses this. Let's say someone, Rechmon Tzlan, has in his home, has in his family, or whatever, somebody who's not well. So he goes and donates tzedakah as a schus for this person. And before he can actually give the tzedakah, the person passes away. is he obligated still to give the tzedakah or not? Say to Paiskin, that if when I made the neder, not me, when somebody made the neder, he said clearly that he's giving the tzedakah if the person will become better. If the person doesn't become better, he unfortunately passes away, then he doesn't have to give the tzedakah. But if the person makes a neder, I'm giving tzedakah for a schus, that this person should have a refuah shleima, but he didn't say that his neder is dependent if he does or doesn't have a refuah shleima, even if Rechmono Tzlan, the person passes away, he's still obligated to give the tzedakah. In understanding this Gemara, there's a fundamental shaila, very, very fundamental shaila. We learned in the previous year, Nidri Einsim. We learned in the previous year that one of the nedarim that are not considered a neder that you have to fulfill is a neder that was made with an oinus, something unexpected happened. So ask the Mefarsh, why does our Gemara have to go to such great lengths in explaining that I meant, that I said forever, and again, Rishonim said, I didn't say forever. Important point Rishonim make. I just said the Peirush should be awesome. Typically, when I say the Peirush should be awesome, since I've been put a time frame, it is forever. But here, I'm given the opportunity to interpret what I meant. And that's why the Rishonim say, if I did say forever, I would have a problem. If I said it explicitly forever. But why? Isn't that a Nidri Einsim? So some Mefarshim say that, you're right, it could be considered a Nidri Einsim. Our Mishnah is trying to come up, our Gemara is trying to come up with a way not to have your cake and eat it too, so to speak. That we could be able to fulfill the nether somewhat, and not have to come on to say that the nether is meaningless because it's Nidri Einsim. The Mefarshim say, there's another kasha the Mefarshim ask. Again, why does our Gemara have to come on to all of these Eitzis, make the neder, and then go to a rav and have ataras nedarim. You have made the neder under circumstances beyond your control. Again, the Mefarshim say, because we want to avoid annulling the neder at all possible. In fact, the Paiskim say that even in the nedarim made in our Mishnah, which as we're learning in the Gemara, were made with a very legitimate reason, one should try to avoid violating the neder in public. Because it'll bring a chilul Hashem. Everybody knows that this neder was made. Even though it was made under certain circumstances, it'll be a terrible chilul Hashem. Jews make nedarim and they don't fulfill them. But then the Mefarshim have a very fundamental explanation in the difference between the Nidri Einsim that we learned in the previous year, that the Mishnah identified what a Nidri Einsim is, to what Nidri Einsim is in this case. In the previous year, what was the case of Nidri Einsim? I invited someone to eat in my house. There was a nether made. The nether was an excellent nether. Then unexpected, something came up that prevented the person from coming. He got sick, his son got sick, the various examples we learned in the previous year. The onus wasn't in the nether. The onus came after the nether. Something prevented the nether from being fulfilled. In this case, the onus is not something that came after the nether. The onus is part of the nether. And when the person made the neder, he did it because he's an oinus. That's not called Nidri Einsim, and that's not necessarily even called a Pesach, that one can go to a Rav to have a Taras Nedarim, and that's why the Gemara looks for other solutions and how to be able to get out of this neder. So we learned in the Mishnah, even if the person didn't force me to make the neder, because why do you volunteer your children? Veshamai says, Veshalam el veil matarim, both the wife and the children, even though you said more than you were required to, it's all considered a neder that's null and void. It's interesting to note that the Chasam Sofer says that we find already in the Torah a precedent for this type of situation. He says we find that Yitzchak tells Avimelech that Rivka is his sister. Now Yitzchak said that, and it should have a concept like a nether. He said that she's my sister. So now Avimelech is asking Yitzchak, how are you allowed to take her back? You publicly said to everyone that she's your sister. So how, isn't that the same as a nether? So Yitzchak answers Avimelech, I only said it because I was afraid you're going to kill me. Our Mishnah just taught us that when a nether is made because the person's under threat, the nether's not a nether, and therefore I could take her back. Amr Afuna, Tana. We learned in a brisa. B'shamer mila yiftach le b'shvua. A person shouldn't volunteer a shvua. B'sila imrim af yiftach le b'shvua. He could even volunteer a shvua. Ask the Gemara. B'shamer on this brisa. B'shamer b'shvua hu dala yiftach le. From this brisa it seems to mean that he's not allowed to volunteer to make a shvua. He may volunteer to make a neder. Ask the Gemara, Vatnan, we just learned in the Mishnah, the Beshemar Imrim, according to Beshamai, lo yiftach loy b'neder. He's not even allowed to volunteer to make a neder. The Su, furthermore, miftachu de lo yiftach loy b'shvua. He's not allowed to volunteer a shvua. Hamadin nod b'shvua, but if he's told to make a shvua, according to Beshamai, it seems to be that the Brisa says they would be allowed to make the shvua. Ask the Gemara, that too is not true, because we learned in the Mishnah, V'tanan b'sham o'imrim b'chol nodrim chutz b'shvua, even when he was told to make a shvua, he may not make it, he only may make a neder. Answers the Gemara, Tanim es nisiv v'neder, our Mishnah, the Mishnah and the Braisa are not a contradiction. Our Mishnah refers to Nedarim, l'di'achin koichin b'shamai, to tell us how far b'shamai is machmer. A shvua he may never make, and a neder he could only make in response to a demand. And Tana Braisa b'shvua, and the Braisa speaks about shvua, l'diyachet koichet Beis Hillel, to show us how lenient Beis Hillel is, that not only can he make a neder, even if he's not asked to make one, he may even make a shvua. Ask the Mefarshim. So the Braisa is teaching us how makel Beis Hillel is, and the Mishnah is teaching us how machmer Beis Shammai is. But don't we have a rule throughout Shas, the koich da tera adif? So why isn't the Mishnah not the source teaching us the extent of Beis Hillel's kula? Answer the Mefarshim. That the way, very interesting teretz, the way to understand this brisa is not to look that we have an independent Mishnah, we have an independent brisa, and the point of the Mishnah is to teach us how far Beis Shammai is machmer, and the point of the brisa is to teach us how far Beis Hillel is makel. The Mishnah and the Braisa were taught together. They complement each other. It's really one limud, and both concepts are expressed, the Chumra Beis Shammai, the Kula Beis Hillel. Rav Ashi says, the way to understand this Braisa, it doesn't have anything to do with the subject that we're discussing. Hoch Tani, Beis Shammai ain't Sheil B'Shvua. Beis Shammai says that one cannot have a Shvua annulled. Just like we learned, and we'll learn in Mitzvah Shem, that a neder may be annulled, so too may a shvua be annulled. The Mefarshim asked, how could the Gemara suggest that Rav Ashi says, that Beis Hillel says, that a shvua could be annulled? We learned the Gemara in Daf Chabeis, the Mishnah Nodeh L'Elokei Yisrael, if somebody mentions Hashem's name in a shvua, he's not allowed to have, that neder may not be annulled. So how is Rav Ashi interpreting that Beis Hillel holds that a neder shvua can be annulled? So I saw a number of terutzim to that question. That was something that Rav Ashi said. So Rishonim said that Rav Ashi will not agree to this teretz of Rav Ashi. He'll have to say the previous teretz. Another teretz is that this brisa is referring to a shvua that was made without the Shem Hashem. That type of shvua Beis Hillel allows to be annulled. But a shvua that was made with Shem Hashem, Beis Hillel will agree, may not be annulled. And the third teretz is that this braisa is referring to din midoraisa. Midoraisa, Beis Shammai says, a shvua may not be annulled. And Beis Hillel says, midoraisa, a shvua may be annulled. What Rav Ashi was referring to is midorabbanan. Yes, says Rav Ashi, Beis Hillel teaches us that midoraisa, shvua may be annulled. But rabbanan, as we've been learning, because of the Chumrah of Shvua, decided that a Shvua should not be annulled. Says the Mishnah, if somebody says, Harei Netilus Elu Karbon, if somebody says that these trees should be Kadosh, Im Einen Nektsasos, if they're not cut down, Talazu Karbon, or this Talaz should be Hegdish. That's how the Rishonim explain that we're referring to Hegdish, not to anything else. It may be in the Srefis, if it's not burnt. The Aloch is they are Kadosh, but Yeshlam Pidyon. In other words, they become Kadosh, but like all items of Kadosh, not all, most items of Kadosh can be redeemed. However, if somebody says, Arein the Tilus Elu Karbon, these trees are hegdish atchi yiktitzu until they're cut. Talazu carbon, or this talus is a carbon atchi tisarif until it's burnt. The halacha is not only are they hegdish, but they're hegdish to the degree, as we're going to learn in tomorrow's shir, they learn pidgin. As Bar Pada explains in the shir we're going to learn tomorrow, that even if one redeems the hegdish, it just becomes hegdish again. And keeps them, you redeem it, it becomes hegdish. It can't lose its status of hegdish until they're actually cut or the talus is burnt. Ask the Gemara, v'lisni kedushas v'ena kedushas. Ask the Gemara, and the Rishonim have two ways of explaining this Gemara. The Ran's gears in the Gemara, it takes out the word v'ena kedushas. And the Gemara says, if the Mishnah, in its first din, is trying to teach us that the halacha is that this talus, that these trees are kadosh, like we have many situations in Shas where something's identified as kadosh, why is it said Yeshlam Pidyon? Why does the Mishnah call it Yeshlam Pidyon? The Mishnah should have used the terminology it always uses throughout Shas, that they're hegdish. The other Rishonim do keep the Giras of Al Gemara of Kedushas Vayna Kedushas and say, perhaps we're going to say that the Mishnah wants to teach us that they're kadosh, but they do have the ability to be redeemed. So it says, why does the Mishnah have to express it by saying Yeshlam Pidyon? Why didn't the Mishnah express this din by saying Kedushas Vayna Kedushas? We would have learned that din. Answers the Gemara, I did the Baal Mishnah Sefer. Since we wanted to learn the Sefer, Eilam Pidyon, and as we learned a moment ago, because the halacha in the Sefer is that not only are the items kadosh, but they constantly remain kadosh, that even if we redeem them, they become immediately kadosh again. So that's the only way of expressing the din of the Sefer. That's why, Tananami Reisha, Yeshlam Pidyon. Ask the Gemara. Heichi Nader. Let's try to understand, ask the Gemara, exactly what is the neder that was made in our Mishnah. Omer, a Meimer, so a Meimer explains the neder was made, but Omer, im eina niktsotzes hayoim, if these trees will not be cut down today, vava hayoim, if the person says, if these trees are not cut down by the end of the day, they should be kadosh, vava hayoim, and if the day passed, v'loy niktsu, and they weren't cut down, they become kadosh. Ask the Gemara, im kelam alul meimer, what's the Mishnah teaching us? That's an obvious thing, that if somebody says that it's kadosh. Pshita. Answers the Gemara like Tzricha. The Gemara answers, Kigoin de'ika zika. There was a wind. Zika nefesh. There was a big wind. And the person says, I'm sure this tree is going to come down, and I'm willing to back up what I said by saying that I'm making a neder that my thing is kadosh if it doesn't burn down, if it doesn't get back down from that wind. That you could say by a tree. What about a talus? V'ktanel agav a talus? Says the Gemara, the talus l'sreifa kaima? Does a talus have to get burnt? Says the Gemara, in. And says, kigoin dikid deleika. There was a fire. And the person is saying, I'm so sure that the fire is going to affect and burn this talus, that if it doesn't burn it, it should be kaddish. Hachanami, dikid zekid nefisha. There's a big wind, and the person is certain that the tree's coming down, there's a big fire, and he's certain this talus is getting burnt. So, teaches us the Mishnah that the nether is an effective nether. Ask them, why not? And the Rishonim have two ways of explaining this Gemara. One way of explaining this Gemara is that the person made the nether because he's sure that the fire is going to burn his talus, a terrible fire raging. The person made the nether because he was sure that this terrible wind is going to blow down his tree. Baruch Hashem, nothing happened. The tree didn't get knocked down. The talus didn't get burnt. So I would consider it maybe a nether betos. And therefore, the tree shouldn't be kadosh. The talus shouldn't be kadosh. Teaches us the Mishnah, it's not considered a nether betos. Another way, the Rishonim explained the Gemara, is that perhaps we should consider it a nether's reason. There's a terrible wind, there's a hurricane. Tornado. There's a terrible fire. And the person wants that the people around him should react, to do tshuva, to daven. So how does he get them to do it? He says, I'm so sure that this is a terrible situation, I'm willing to make my tree kadosh, because it's going to certainly be knocked down by the tornado. My towels are certainly going to get burnt by this fire. So maybe it should just be considered a nidri's reason, which we learned at the beginning of our perek, is not considered a nether. Kamashmalon, that that's not the case of our Mishnah. It's considered a full-fledged nether. Before we end our shir, we learned in Amud Aleph that if somebody makes a nether, unless he was an oinus, unless there was a special circumstance, we can't allow him to reinterpret his nether. So the Mefarshim asked, going back to a Gemara we quoted in our shir today, the Gemara we said says in Masechta Shabbos, the Klal Yisrael said Nasav and Nishma, but the nether was considered a nether oinus because they really didn't mean it. Asked the Mefarshim, we just said that if you make a nether, you have no right to say afterwards, this is what I meant. The Gemara said, Amar Aleph, Dvarim Shebalei Vein Advarim. So they made a nether, they said publicly, declared, Nasav and Nishma. So how could they come afterwards and say, we were oinsim? Say the Mefarshim, a beautiful pshat. To whom did they say Nasav and Nishma? To HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So when I make a nether to you, people don't know what are doing in each other's hearts and minds. So you take the nether at face value. But when you make a nether, when you make a declaration to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does know what's in our hearts and our minds. So yes, we said Nasav and Nishma, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew that in their minds, they didn't really want to accept the Torah. They did it only because they were under duress. That's why they were allowed to claim that it was a nether b'oinus. But Baruch Hashem, later on, the Gemara says, Hada Kabluah, that we were makabel the Torah, b'ahava b'simcha.